This is the Adam Carriker Show on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. Check out all things The Ticket at theticketfm.com. Also, CarrikerChronicles.com as well. We got some texts, some textuals from the text line. What we got there, Jake?
Yeah, a few thoughts from the text line here. 2366 says Nebraska-Michigan will probably be a big noon kickoff.
I hadn't even thought about that. It's actually a fair point because Fox has the rights to the Big Ten. Their showcase game is the noon game. ESPN goes at night. CBS for years has had the SEC in the 3:30 window, at least 3:30 Eastern time. So that's why Fox took the noon window. And it makes a lot of sense from a business standpoint as far as always having the best Big Ten team going at noon. You kind of stand alone. You're going to be the big game, at least at that time. I get it. I understand it. I don't like it. You need to have your best games at night. Now, at least we're not Penn State with the whiteout tradition, and that really bothered them when they wanted to do the whiteout game. I believe it was versus Ohio State last year. I think Ohio State was on the big noon kickoff. I swear to God, it was like, hold on. What somebody say my favorite number was on the text line?
Riley W. says Adam Carriker's favorite number is 80,015,094.
80,015,094 times Ohio State was had the big noon kickoff game last year. Nailed it, my friend. You nailed it exactly. I understand. It's business. It is about maximizing exposure so you can maximize selling marketing slots to sponsors and generating revenue. And noon was the best time available for the Big Ten. Completely get it. Completely understand it. Don't have to like it. And I don't. Your better games, and I've always thought there should be a good game at noon. There should be a good game at 3:30. There should be a good game at 7. You can even slide one in at 8. So you got a couple on at night. All right. I don't mind having a couple of TVs going, or, you know, there's this thing called a previous channel button on a remote when my kids aren't stealing the remote and hiding it from me. But my point is, you like, the Big Ten's going to have premier national games. And having the same teams on at noon all the time. Let's be honest. The Big Ten was a little bit top heavy last year. Ohio State, Penn State, okay? Oregon as well. I'm still getting used to the West Coast teams being in there, but they're there and I'm getting more used to it. If Nebraska played Michigan at noon, that'd be great if we're the big noon kickoff game. But how much better would it be if it was at night? Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Obviously, it's just, like you said, it's just kind of the window that they have to work with. And hopefully it kind of helps their big noon kickoff show. I think they addressed that, you know, kind of coming in there. And I forgot that Ohio State fans did legitimately get upset last year because they were being put on big noon kickoff too much, which is the, again, it's the best as far as like advertising throughout the week. Fox will just pump it up the whole time. But can you bring, you know, even once in a while, you need to have an afternoon or a night game to bring recruits in so they're not rushing from the night before having played. I completely forgot about that. So that's a good point that you make there. A couple other thoughts here. Jason, a longtime listener, says, AC, you sound like Sean Callahan in the offseason national championship talk. Here we go again.
Two things. Number one, I love Kool-Aid. Number two, how dare you take shots at Sean? He's a black belt. He will knock you into next week. All right. You know, it's hard, though, because like I said, I genuinely like things that have been done. There's still question marks out there. All right. The D-line is developing. Nash and Ty were good, obviously. All right. Especially Ty took it to another level this past season. When you look at the pure athleticism in that room, it's as athletic a defensive line as we've had in a while. The second level, the linebackers, the athleticism is on another level. The experience is more in the back end. All right, with the DBs and whatnot, and Rule talked about how they could start with four or five different DB safety combinations. Jake pointed out, maybe nobody has stood out, which is why we're talking about that. You can also look at it as you've got depth or competition, multiple guys you trust. Hopefully it's not because nobody has stood out. No, as far as, this is why I hesitate to do prediction shows, because you start to just, all right, here's the deal. Until we start winning close games, until we start beating ranked teams, winning close games, having a winning record versus Big Ten opponents, it's hard not to get excited with what I've seen because I legit like it. But it's also hard until you see it. You got to see it on the field, which is why I also kind of hold back on the prediction shows. But I've talked about it before. Everybody wants to drink Kool-Aid. Nobody wants to sit here for months on end and be like, oh, this stinks. No, we want to be excited. I don't want to be thirsty. Give me the Kool-Aid. Quench my thirst, Jake. Stop pointing out Minnesota stats, by the way.
I sat on that one since the draft.
So. You have. You've just been waiting on it, huh?
I like to row the boat.
Does the Minnesota game become more intriguing to you? Like Malachi Coleman, a top Nebraska kid, Lincoln kid, transfers there. I assume he's going to play for him. He's a talented kid with a bright future. Does it become more intriguing if he's like a starting wide receiver for Minnesota going against the Huskers that night or that day or noon or whenever the game is?
Yeah, I think it's more intriguing. It obviously adds a little bit to it. But again, we've just been through so much crap in the last so many years. Like, it's like, what would that feel like? What would it feel like when Noah Fant went off against the Reds? Like, we've already been through these situations. So, yeah, I mean, I think it could add a little bit more to it. I'm just more interested overall in, like, breaking this 5-game streak against Minnesota. There should never be a situation where Nebraska has a 5-game streak. And all credit to PJ Fleck, and they do well, but it's not like they're routinely a top 15 team or anything. So 4 of those 5, the last 4 have been one possession games, if you can believe that.
Here's what I would love. Because we ended the losing season drought. We ended the drought versus Wisconsin. We won the bowl game. We finished with the winning season. We did some things last year. Here's what I'd like to do this year. Let's end the drought versus Minnesota. And we did win two one-score games last year. But let's have a winning record in one-score games. I believe we were 2-4 a year ago. I'd have to go back and double-check. Let's have a winning record in one-score games. And let's the stats are too depressing, okay, since we've last beat a ranked team. Let's beat a ranked team or two. I believe that's allowed. That's allowed, right?
We can
beat
so.
Two of them. Okay. Let's beat Minnesota, have a winning record in one score games, and let's beat a ranked team. Let's start there. If we did that and we were 8-4 at the end of the regular season, by God, I'd be happy. All right. I'd be happy and I would take that. And I know the word jump, year three jump, jump, year three jump has been thrown out by Matt Rhule as much as anybody. And I'm like, that's awesome. I personally wish he'd stop saying it. Let the play on the field do the talking. He likes to do it. That's totally cool. For me, I'm just like a jump. For me, it implicates 9-3 at least. Like a jump is not improving by one win, 7-8 wins. If we beat Minnesota, had a winning record of 1-score games and beat a ranked team and we ended up 8-4, I'd be very, very happy with that. And let's just keep building on that going forward. All right, anything else from the textual line there?
Ken E. off of YouTube says, beat the teams on the schedule you should beat, then we can start talking about Michigan and Penn State. I just want the team to think about the next play, not the next game.
Yeah, he's 100% right. I agree with that comment 100%. Like, that's what Penn State does. Like, I'm not a Penn State guy, but I just don't want to jinx James Franklin. I don't want to jinx Penn State. They beat everyone they're supposed to. They never lose to anybody they're not supposed to beat. They always beat the teams they're supposed to. Right now, it's the Michigans and the Ohio States that get them. And they had Notre Dame beat. And then Notre Dame came out and ended up winning that game to go to the national championship. He's done such a great job at Penn State. I would be cool with having the problem of, hey, we're going to beat all these teams we should beat. Now, how do we beat Ohio State? How do we beat Michigan? How do we beat Penn State? How do we beat those teams in the upper echelon? If that became the problem once again, I'd be totally cool with that. All right. Anything else?
Nothing as of now.
So when you think of all time, just freakishly great athletes, who pops into your head?
Probably LT, you know, on the defensive side. Then, you know, you kind of think of like even LeBron. I mean, that's part of the reason why for his greatness, those type of guys.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, I go to multiple things. Like, who can do multiple things? That's what I think of. So I immediately think of Bo Jackson. I immediately think of Deion Sanders. Carl Lewis won so many medals in different events in the Olympics. Obviously, Michael Phelps has the most amount of medals, and he did it in different races, okay? Bo Jackson, I came across his senior year stats of high school the other day. McDory High School in Alabama. All right. His senior year rushing yards. Not going to blow you away. 1,173 yards. Averaged 11 yards per carry. Why didn't they give him the ball more? That was my thought. All right, 17 rushing touchdowns. He was also a defensive end. Think about that. Bo Jackson coming off the edge, trying to rip your head off as a quarterback, a defensive end, a kicker, and kick returner. That's just being an athlete right there. Obviously, pretty good at baseball. You know, did all right in the majors. Hit 20 home runs. Had a batting average of over 500. Tied the national high school record for home runs. National high school record. Struck out 14 batters when he was pitching. I didn't even know he pitched in the state championship game. Struck out 14.
Man.
All right, then you get to track and field. Won the state decathlon championship, which is the ultimate of just doing a million different things, by the way, the decathlon. Set the state record in triple jump, which is, does that say 48 feet, 8 inches? Is, does that sound right? That seems like really far.
Yeah.
That's got to be a misprint. All right, state high school record in the high jump, 6 feet, 9 inches. I mean, he just basically sets record in just about every sport that he does, and he does everything, even kicker, defensive end, running back. Like, I've always thought, man, him as an athlete, us as fans being able to watch him, that hip injury that he had, he was just never the same afterwards. Like, that's the guy that I wished he was really in his prime, and I was just a little too young to understand what was going on at that point in time. I wish he could have played longer, obviously, for him, but for people like me and for fans in general. Like, he's a legit, when you say generational talent, that is a generational talent right there. All right, a couple quick things before we head to break. Who do you think, amongst all the rookies that were just drafted, are the four guys that have the most amount of jerseys that have been sold up to this point since the draft?
Well, Cam Ward,
yep,
would be up there. I think Shedeur Sanders, I've seen the headlines, has been up there. Ashton Jeanty.
Yep.
Boy, and I got to think of somebody else here. I don't know. I could get blanket on the last one. Oh, Travis Hunter. Yeah. How'd I miss that one?
Shedeur Sanders is third. Fifth round pick is third. I'm just curious to see how this unfolds, because people love, like, right now it's easy to hate on him. For me, I don't think I've ever hated on him. I just said, hey, there's gigantic things to be concerned about here. And I said it a long time ago. I don't think that's hating. I think it's just honesty, or my honest opinion and take. I could have been wrong. Obviously, some other people saw similar things. But man, people also love a comeback story. What if he goes into Cleveland and he's in there with Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, all first-round picks, a Super Bowl champ, and then you've got another rookie who was drafted two rounds ahead of you in Dylan Gabriel, and he's able to go in, carry himself the right way, work hard, earn respect, at some point earn the starting job and have a successful NFL career, it could be potentially one of the most awesome comeback stories you've ever heard of, because you've never seen a fall like this in the NFL draft. Like I said before, most people fall from like top 5 to top 25 in the draft. Brady Quinn fell to 22. Aaron Rodgers fell to 24. Like, those were big deals. He fell days. By the way, there was the last guy drafted in the third round. He was in there the entire time in the green room. Mm. And he sat there by himself. He was drafted by Green Bay. And Roger Goodell actually, because he was still in there and didn't leave, came out and announced the pick himself.
Oh, nice.
And I thought that was pretty cool. And that was a very cool moment for that young man. But this could potentially, it could potentially go even worse than it is. It could also potentially be one of the most intriguing comeback stories we've ever seen in sports, because we've never seen a draft go anywhere near or anything close to like what we just saw with Shedeur. So I'm curious to see how that unfolds. All right, ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere.